Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast. I'm Jodie Duval, and I'm a functional naturopath in Perth, WA. This is a place where you can expand your knowledge on how to optimise your health and realise your full potential. We'll have cutting-edge information with expert guests and having lots of fun along the way. Get ready to be empowered and motivated to reach your higher vitality and find your ultimate potential. Let's go! Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 non-profit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia. With state-of-the-art technology, protocols and personalised healthcare, compounded medicines made specifically to your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au. Back on the show for the third time on the Revital Health Podcast is Willow Francis, and he is back as the anxiety medic and to talk to us about all things anxiety. And we've all experienced this, and it's horrible. And a lot of people don't even know what this is and how impactful it is on our life. So Willow is the most humble man I know. And meeting over 12 years ago, we had a common love of superfoods, and we met at a cacao ceremony. Him and his wife, Catherine, create the most amazing ceremonies, and he has a world of experience in everything that you can imagine, from lucid dreaming, from psychedelics and bringing psychedelics to a lot of people, and ceremonies, and his heart math expertise. He's an entrepreneur, and I've gone through many intensive trainings for nervous system regulation and one-on-one coaching with Willow, and I am just so grateful to call him a friend. So his desire to help has now led him from his own journey with anxiety to the anxiety medic. And this is a six-week offering to go deep, to give you the tools to help you end your anxiety suffering. And so we talk so many depths of this and all ranges of what you may be experiencing, and we sort of cut to the crux of anxiety. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation.
We have, for the third time, back on the show. My goodness, Willow, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jodie. It's great to be here. It's great to be in your clinic.
Yeah, we are here in the lounge area.
There is some chill. This is chilling here, which it I does. Love.
We've got Catherine down on the PMF. She's sorted on the rain tub. Yeah, we've got the red lights. So we are here to explore multiple things today. As we always, we dive in different directions. But the purpose of today is to really bring to light this anxiety episode of living as a human. And you, as the anxiety medic now, have created a beautiful six-week intervention for people. And so our purpose of that is to explore this, and it's such a broad area. And as we get into conversations about this all the time, and it is hard to really narrow down certain areas of this, but I want to speak to some of your experience first. You know, so you have done a huge amount of work in this field, and really it doesn't give enough in even your little brochure here that I'm holding. Enough, you know, it doesn't speak to what you actually bring to the table. So let's go through some of the areas that you have explored in the last 30 years.
Okay, well, that's a big field for Willow to chat about.
I know.
So I suppose people like to know that there's some medical knowledge, experience. I worked as a nurse for many years.
Yeah.
Ended up in emergency as my favourite place to work. I was also a paramedic in the military before that. And once I left the mainstream model of nursing, my original leaving, I walked into the field of complementary medicine. So I just absorbed trainings in flower remedies and Reiki and educational kinesiology, and which led me to meditation, and then that led me to plant medicine work, which are entheogens or psychedelic therapy, if you like, for different languaging for different people, working in the jungle and then working in the Western way of co-facilitating events. And the background of meditation being a real constant, and then really having a breakthrough 5 or 6 years ago with my meditation, learning a very different style, a much more open style, which led me to, you know, also we forgot the HeartMath work, which HeartMath being a research-based organization in Boulder Creek, California, that really has spent the last 30 years re-educating the world through their research on the physical heart. And this has got so much to do with everything. So that changed my life. We, Catherine and I, my partner, we went to America, trained up in the States after training in Sydney. And then for the last decade, we've been working with that modality, but also working with mindful self-compassion. Because I find people come to doing different work, but they're not being very kind to themselves. And that stops them actually really embracing the work, because maybe they don't feel worthy. So the human condition is so multi-layered, it's a real challenge. So that sort of colours the broad strokes. My passion is really to help people with their suffering. I don't want to help them suffer.
Unsuffering.
Unsuffer. And the way I've looked at that is, you know, some of my deepest experiences of watching people have profound mystical experiences using entheogens, using psychedelics, or ceremony work, or meditation. And then the challenge they have of integrating that into their human experience without denigrating the human experience, without making it a bad thing. That was really interesting to me. How do we integrate that? How do we make this a real thing? And obviously a thing is not to grasp onto mystical experiences. They're wonderful. We love them.
It's a gateway, isn't it?
It's an insight. There's a growth. And I learned a bit about spiral dynamics and the way we're looking at our evolution as humans, because so many people, they think they've sorted something out. They did all this great work. They did breath work. They did, you know, exploration with psychology, all different things, and they find the same challenge coming up again. But if you really look, it's not the same. You've done another lap, and if you look at spiral dynamics, you've come back to that point, but you're at a different level now. So you're evolving, and this is where you can be perfect in the moment, but still learn and grow. That interesting paradox between I'm absolutely 100% perfect right now with every single thing that's going on, but I can change and grow and improve. And the mind does not like paradox. It tries to resolve paradox. The paradox, the way to resolve paradox, if you want, is to go beyond it. But it doesn't need to be resolved. It can be held equally in both hands. And so what I found with this, with the field of neurocardiology, which is what HeartMath's all about, we'll talk about that in a minute, because it's really important that there's knowledge there that's not being leveraged,
and it's science, which everyone loves to hear that it's all about science. It's all about the research
from anatomy and physiology, knowledge.
How
can we learn new stuff about the body? It's like, well, our techs got better, our researchers got better, we've evolved a different way of looking and asking different questions. And I think that's a big part. So they were like, how can we integrate the mystical experiences? How can we integrate growth and still be 100% okay with where we are, regardless of how much we move ahead or how many steps forward, how many steps back?
Yeah.
And that's where emotional regulation comes in, the capacity to settle one's nervous system, to put it in a bigger way, to be okay not being okay. And this is what I'm really interested in. And then the way the anxiety medics come about is, as we've all experienced over the last few years, we've had a global experience that we never had before. You know, it was had many years ago with the plagues of the past. But we never thought in our lifetime we would go through an event that really threatened our safety, our security, our understanding of our sense of agency or not in our society, in our culture. And so anxiety is really ramped up post-COVID, which is what I'm obviously talking about as I refer to the big challenge. And so we're seeing a whole culture is just anxious.
Yeah.
And then so my diving into anxiety is like what we decided that we need to serve this. We need to help people take a different look at their anxiety.
Mm.
And obviously anxiety can be broken up into different spheres.
Mm.
But what I like to do is really take it to a real point. So
yeah.
Imagine this. Imagine like you woke up this morning and you found yourself living on a huge rock surrounded by trillions of light years of empty space, and you had no idea how you got here. You know, had no idea who you are, what your purpose is, and you had no idea where you're going. Just imagining that, well, that's our condition. We're just covering up that reality.
Yeah.
And to me, that would create anxiety. For me,
yeah.
That created anxiety.
Yeah.
That existential, we call it existential anxiety. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to me in a perfect universe that we live in that that would be a natural state.
Yeah.
What we call an open state.
Yeah.
So if we can learn to be okay not being okay,
yeah.
If we can learn to be okay not knowing,
yeah.
Not having answers, living in an open state.
Mm.
But getting agreement from our emotions and our body and our mind,
yeah.
Then we can be open to whatever is in our immediate experience.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can start to resolve things that we don't like.
Yeah.
So the
truth is that we're never going to be in a comfortable zone of continuality of the same scenario or mindset.
Beautiful.
But we expect that we are, and then we get upset when we're not.
You've nailed that on the head,
yeah. It's just from what you're saying, it's just coming through that I'm realizing for the first time, really, and I knew this, but that we never have consistency. So why be so anxious about that, never going to be having consistency, and how do we be calm in the non-consistent?
Yeah, and that all points towards one of our greatest challenges, which is our preferences.
Mm.
And that means, where do the preferences come from? They come from our mind.
Mm.
And why have we got those preferences? Because we want to be safe. We want everyone to love us. We don't want anything ever to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have food, shelter, money. We want to achieve. We want to feel purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always possible.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The sooner we come to the truth of our reality,
yeah,
or a truth,
yeah,
better word,
yeah, yeah,
the sooner we can dial it down a bit, the sooner we can relax a bit.
Yeah.
So a big part of dealing with anxiety is to stop objectifying experiences, stop making up stories about what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is where we have to mature.
Yeah.
If you want to deal with your anxiety, whether it's an acute sore that a chronic sore that you've been dealing with for many years, maybe it's presenting as an addiction, maybe it's presenting as a phobia.
Yeah.
You know, anxiety presents itself in so many different ways.
Mm.
And that's why I think it's ignored or it's normalized. Oh, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just the way it is. It's the way you are in the moment.
Exactly.
But the moment we take a different relationship to it, everything changes.
Yeah.
But another helpful example, besides understanding that it's normal, like we've talked about, if you're standing on the edge of a cliff, about to jump off with your paraglider for the first time.
Which you also do, by the way.
I would expect to be anxious.
Yeah.
Like you'd be stupid.
Yeah.
We have a mechanism that keeps us safe.
Yeah.
Now that mechanism that we're looking at that keeps us safe, it's sort of on all the time now.
Mm.
And that's the problem.
Mm.
And it doesn't recognize danger as real or made up.
Yeah.
It doesn't recognize it as immediate or from the past. So what I like to do with anxiety, I suppose, this is what this is about, is if we really look. So one of the most freeing things for me was looking at my direct experience.
Mm-hmm.
And by direct experience, I mean now, not what my mind's saying, not my stories, not my narrative.
Yeah.
Because we get lost there. And there's no real solution to that. Because it's a story. But if we look at this present moment and I say, oh, I'm feeling anxious, well, that's a label. We agree, anxious, like we could call it something else. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling lost, I'm feeling alone, all these labels of a, what I'm really talking about is some sensations I'm having. So what's really going on? Are you feeling anxious, or are you experiencing some sensations that you're really not liking, or that you're judging, or you're creating a story around, you're objectifying? These sensations mean I'm anxious, and that's wrong and bad. Whereas in the model I'm working with is, I'd say, in this present moment, you have some sensations arising. You prefer not to have them, for sure. I've had profound, strong panic attacks and anxiety. I know I don't want to fucking feel that. But let's get past our preferences.
Yeah.
Let's mature and say, well, okay, so if I'm not experiencing anxiety, what am I experiencing? Well, the direct experience is butterflies in my stomach. And even that's an interpretation. What do you mean butterflies? That's a name, a label. Well, buzzing in my body. Shortness of breath. We can stay with that one. That's a racing pulse. Okay. And in this moment, is that going to kill you? And you realize, well, I've had a lot of this and it hasn't. I'm scared that it will. And that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the fear, which is the base of anxiety, is a form of fear. But I'm saying right now, without your story, without all these things, and you say, well, no, I'm this sensation, I don't like it, I don't want it, but it's what's going on. So then we start to change our relationship, and we stop flippantly labeling our immediate experience of life to a label that has a story attached. And this is simple, but really profound.
Yeah.
Because then you sit here, and as you'd say, as I found, I've never had anyone say opposite. When I sit someone down and we go through this process, and I say, have you got any problems right now? And they try, I can see their mind racing around to find the problem. But in the immediacy of the moment, we find there isn't one. So the question is, why don't you stay there then? Let me sleep over at my house because I've only got so much room. But why don't we stay in the moment where everything's okay?
And it's almost like we are searching to stay in a zone that we are used to being stay in. And I think this happens quite a lot with trauma and negative circumstances where people know that it's not a good thing for them to be in that state, like you said. But that is what the body knows to be safe now. It's a new regulation. It's a new ability for the body to recognize that now as safety. So we must remain in there at all causes.
And this talks to neurocardiology, this field that we've been exploring. And it talks to the new understanding of the relationship of the amygdala, this little almond-sized lump in our
little
brain
vector in there.
That recognizes patterns. And it, the thing with the amygdala, it recognizes patterns, but it's happy to take a sort of rough recognition. It's not exact. The example I use with people is like, you're at a party, and you're a fellow, and this girl walks in the room, and you've got an instant dislike for her. You haven't even talked to her. You just look over. And little did you know, your XXX girlfriend, who really belittled you and made you feel emasculated and didn't make you feel very good, had the same color hair, the sort of same similar shape. So what's happened is your amygdala has looked over there, operating so fast, and made a judgment call, bad. And now your physiology is responding to the input, because the amygdala and the heart actually are connected. Every time the heart beats, there's a firing in the amygdala. Why is that important? Well, the heart's actually gathering data from the nervous system and sending that information up to the brain to make these decisions around safety or not safety. So the complexity of our neurology is off the charts. You know, we can talk about this for days. It's so interesting.
Fascinating. And for years we've been taught, you know, I've had you in to endeavor to speak to the students.
That's right.
How many years ago was this now? 8 years? My goodness. You know, this heart math. And this, as you say, this new field, it's not really, you know, we're just discovering this now, is just incredible. And we were having a brief conversation about it the other day when you popped in, and it was about the second brain. You know, we got the brain, second brain, and the heart, and the communication between that, the signaling between all of this, it's just incredible.
And it needs to be understood not as some new fangled take or theory, which would be about anatomy and physiology.
Solid.
This is really interesting. It's real, so why do we think of the heart as having any importance? Well, if you travel back to the fetus, great spot to start, where we all were. Most people don't realize the heart started beating all by itself before there was a functional nervous system, before there was any brainwave activity. So for me, the next question is, well, what started that? We don't know. Why did the heart just start beating by itself? But the fact it started in the heart should tell us something as intelligent, exploring.
Most electrical signals.
Exactly. And so as we look at the development of the nervous system, we look at the development of the heart, what we start to see is the heart actually communicates to the, every cell in the body instantaneously through the electromagnetic field of the heart, which is huge, thousands of times bigger than the brain. And as we looked further at the heart, we found out, oh, it's got its own nervous system, just like a brain. It's got neurons. And that nervous system is so complex that we now know the heart thinks, feels, remembers, and learns all by itself. It sets the pace. It doesn't get direction from the brain. So this is, it's actually a beautiful relationship between the heart brain. We call it heart brain. So we've got the brain in the heart, the small brain. But then we've got this model now that is not independent of each other. The heart and brain operate synergistically. But generally, there's a lot more information going from the heart to the brain than the brain to the heart.
And much faster.
And a lot faster. Now, why is that important? Well, the nervous system, the two branches, come through the heart. That's how it's collecting its data. And then it's sending up this code. And the code is interpreted by the thalamus, this little switchboard operator in the brain. And to put it simple, it's either feelings of safety or not. And interestingly, we never knew that the heart affects cognition. And by that, I mean how we think, which parts of the brain come online. And that's the heart telling us that, not the brain. And as we all know that, you know, we've all had experience of being really upset or really angry and saying really dumb things. In technical terms, that's called cortical inhibition. What that means is your brain's offline. You're in survival mode. And just shit's coming out your mouth because you're in the fight, flight, freeze. You're in survival mode.
No alcohol needed.
No alcohol needed. Conversely, we didn't realise that when we change the feeling state of the heart, when we work with our emotions in a really deliberate manner, we actually activate the neocortex, which is the part of our brain that makes us amazing human beings. We're out of those base operational functions. Now we can think of the other, which is a huge step evolutionary, as we see in children when they stop being so narcissistic and they actually look outside themselves. This is a huge developmental stage. And when we're in fight, flight, freeze, well, we're all upset. When we're anxious, when we're stressed, it's all about us. We've got our heads up our arms. We can't see anything else. But when we change that feeling state, actively, consciously generate positive emotion, that travels up and lights up the neocortex so we can think of the other and maybe all the others, like on the planet, all the others. We get out of our little, you know, ostrich in the sand thing. But also we get to think outside the box. We wake up that part of the brain that has solutions.
Creativity
that we don't have access to if we're in this other state. So we're seeing the heart as this incredible self-organized information processing center with its own brain that is so important if we want to optimize our health, our well-being, even our consciousness, even how our consciousness presents itself. When we're heart-focused, we're sort of cardiozoic rather than cerebrally driven. The potential is huge. We get to our humanity quicker.
It's absolutely stunning. I want to dive into sort of solutions in a minute, but I think the audience needs to know, listeners need to know, that you sort of undertoned yourself slightly at the start, you know, with your experience. So I'd like to just redo that bit. just so I think it's important context about what you've been through in terms of your discovery points of, you know, even in our last podcast, lucid dreaming, you know, and your experiences and teachings around lucid dreaming. So your ability to access different states, not only through the psychedelics, but also in the natural state of dreaming and lucidity in terms of the brain's capacity is huge. And that is because you have been through so much, you know, and I won't dive into that, but you've gone to the ends of the earth to get this experience. And this is what you're giving others. And so when I met you, you'd been through, or you're in the raw business, you know, so you were doing the raw superfoods.
Yeah.
And then that was 13 years ago when we did our cacao ceremony with you guys. And that's when you were, you just started or almost was,
just getting underway.
And then obviously years of experience, even previous to that, with your psychedelic medicine and facilitating the most gorgeous, beautiful, incredible circles and hold space for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. And so the experience you get from those nervous systems feedback is just, you know, extraordinary, Willow. And then, you know, constantly trying to find the time, the points in your life and ways to get through this message is, you know, it can be relentless because of the fact that the way that the world is set up, right? But I think what you're trying to create is easy, accessible information for people and abilities for people to find you to then get the impact, like you say, to reduce suffering in all areas.
Yeah.
And it can be so simple, but we are so up against ourselves all the time, aren't we?
Certainly are.
We are just trying to...
biggest obstacle.
Yeah.
But it's the small self we talk about.
Mm.
It's really the personality self. Mm. And I suppose that's what started my journey when I was very little.
Mm.
You know, I'm 8 years old and I was looking at the world thinking, what the hell is this? I just don't get these people.
I didn't sign up to come here.
No, it's like, why is everyone not being friendly?
Yeah.
You really ask those questions.
Yeah, why are people assholes? I don't get
what the arseholics everywhere. I know there's alcoholics, like my father's one, but you know, the arseholic was the part that I had trouble with. I can handle the understanding of addictions.
Yeah.
But the addiction to being an arsehole, I didn't have much time.
There's arseholes everywhere.
Yeah.
Still.
And that sort of started my journey. And I think one of the benefits that Willow's had in his life is multiple experiences of living on planet Earth.
Mm.
I didn't follow one way. I didn't just do one job.
Yeah.
I didn't believe what I was being told, so I went looking.
Mm.
And that's why I flew to America on one-way ticket with $400 in my back pocket and see what was going to happen.
Mm.
Walked over the Himalayas and started just exploring being a human on the planet.
Guatemala, cacao, like you've dived into all the areas in depth.
Yeah.
You've experienced everything you've tried to do.
And it's all, I told Catherine that this conversation was getting up. It's going to end up all around consciousness.
Mm.
What is that? What are we? Who are we?
Yeah.
What's going on here? Yeah. Like I said, I woke up and realized I was on a rock in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
And when you do that, there's different ways you can be. A lot of people shut down and go for security. That's survival instinct.
Ignore.
Push it away.
That didn't happen.
Give me another drink. Give me a smoke. Give me this.
Yeah.
Give me more food. Give me more status. Give me more identity.
Yeah.
And interestingly, our over-identification is a deep part of anxiety.
Mm.
We're over-identifying with our role, our image, our name, our process.
Absolutely.
And we can change that, which is good. But so, there was a lot of just getting out there in the world.
Mm.
And then there was a lot of signing up for a lot of stuff, the Vipassana meditations, journeys with shamans in the jungle of South America, me just being me, landing somewhere and just being there and seeing what life was going to do.
Yeah, setting yourself on fire.
Setting my head on fire. And then out-of-body experiences. Experiences of consciousness slightly different is what I talk about it now. And having out-of-body experiences, it's a lot of people don't really get what that's about.
Mm.
But for me, fundamentally, it started to ameliorate or reduce my existential anxiety because I realized if I can be standing next to my bed, fully conscious, not dreamlike, but fully awake, and see myself asleep in bed, then obviously when I die, something different's going to happen to what I might be fearing,
mm-hmm.
my
mm-hmm.
annihilation, the
mm-hmm.
end of Willow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the egoic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But having yourself in two different spots at the same time is also very challenging for the ego. It's like, well, what's going on here? But as I had lots and lots and lots of these experiences, and obviously meeting other people who had and people who had never had them, and then helping people learn how to have them, it just made my understanding of this experience wider.
Yeah,
it's not so singular, not just an isolated identity surviving on a rock. But, you know, you get these wider expanded states of consciousness. You know, we get them from meditation. We get them in lots of different ways. And for me, I seem to have got them from experiences, experiences beyond the normal. Non-ordinary states of reality is one term, and that covers a lot of ground. So all of this just kept moving me along. And I don't even know that I was on a moving along path. And then I had a real epiphany. This is a really good story to bring us back to anxiety again. So I was working in emergency, a Fremantle emergency hospital, and they have different teams there. You've got team one, two, and three. Three is what we call minors, which for you guys, you know, it's broken arms and fishing hooks in the back of the head. It's maybe not so minor if you're the person, but in the scheme of things, it can take some time. We'll get to it. It's not life-threatening. Then we had team two, which was like, well, we don't know. We better take some blood pressures and bloods and have a good story and see what's going on. Sort of moderate level of attention. Then we had team one. Team one was the ambulance arriving, people doing chest compressions or whatever, straight into team one. This is all hands on deck, let's go. And it's when you watch it in action, it's phenomenal how these humans bring their skill, their care, their professionality to save a life, basically, to keep a life going. This is that's a underlying thing. So my first time on team one was fascinating understanding of anxiety. So obviously, I had to have a certain level of skill to be allowed to go and participate in team one. You just have to. You don't just have someone walk off the street and try and help out. But for me, what happened was the intensity of the experience combined with my deep desire to care, my attachment as a nurse, my identity as a nurse, and all this collected together found me standing there with my hands shaking, trying to draw up some medication, totally ineffective, trying to write on the board, because every time we give a medication, we write down the time and the substance and the amount. I couldn't even write English. It was like chicken scratching. My whole body had been taken over by my nervous system. Fight, flight, freeze. It had just kicked in. I had cognitive inhibition. I had no capacity to think. I was just standing there. And I was so shocked and ashamed, of course. It's like, what happened? But on the flip side, I was watching these other people occasionally move around, asking for some fluids to go up. Let's put a large bore catheter in. Let's do this. And I'm like, what the fuck? And so what I was seeing was balanced care. I was seeing care at the point it needed to be at, knowing I can't go any faster. That's overcare. Now I'm just, but in my desire to do good, good is getting in the way, we say.
It's the urgency.
The urgency. Whereas if I can regulate myself, I can bring forth my skills, the implicit knowledge, all these years of having put up IVs and written on boards, that can just come out in a really balanced way. You know, I took myself away from that first experience and gave myself a really hard time, of course.
Beat yourself up,
Yeah, but it made me look further into the neurocardiology, the way the nervous system works, the way knowledge works, how it comes out under pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And that's an extreme example, but you can be running late for work in the traffic, and your care, your integrity, your identity starts to really come forward. Oh, I'm always on time. I have respect and dignity, and I need my job, and that survival comes in. So suddenly you're in the traffic feeling shit. You're like wound up. You're giving the bird to the people next to you.
Arsehole mode.
The arsehole comes out. It's like, what happened there? What happened was a thing we call anxiety, and it's normal. It's natural. That this trigger, this switch we fired off in these circumstances with these perceptions taking place, with these ideas, if you like, taking place that fire it all off. And so a lot of a different way of looking at anxiety is our relationship with it. And it's interesting that care becomes overcare. So care, when we're caring, we feel good. We feel nourished. We feel uplifted.
Yeah.
When we're overcaring, we feel drained.
Yeah.
But interestingly, overcare leads to anxiety, which is like when we're worrying about something. And we think, oh, no, I love them so much. That's why I'm worrying about them. No, it's not. You're overcaring. You've extended your care into draining, energy draining. And we can look at that physiologically with the cortisol, all the other hormones that start to change in your body when you shift into overcare. And that's what we need to dial down. The practices that, I do and we teach are all about dropping cortisol immediately and creating the beautiful vitality hormone, the most popular hormone in the body, if you like, is called dehydroepiandrosterone, or DHEA. It's the vitality hormone. And we can see when we have it and when we don't. You see a little kid going to the shop, he's skipping, he's hopping, picking up a little leaf and making it into a little space shuttle. It takes a while to get to the shop because efficiency isn't what they're up to. They're alive. We're looking vitality. At a person who's done a few more laps around the sun. They got their head on their smartphone, they're going straight there, straight back. Not much vitality, not much aliveness. There's more concern about the efficiency, the effectiveness. So all these things play into our nervous system's response and then how we respond in life. And that's...
Do you know what I've noticed just on DHEA? We were having this conversation this morning, in fact, actually. The I've noticed in clinical practice, not only anxiety has risen, there's a correlation here. Anxiety has risen after COVID, but DHEA levels are dropping dramatically on average across clients.
Yeah.
And yeah, just again, ding.
Yeah, well, it's not surprising because DHEA and cortisol work on a seesaw. You can't just take lots of DHEA. You have to lower the cortisol. When cortisol drops down, DHEA can come up. And that's that's what we work with, is getting this hormonal shift over the six-week period that I work with people. And you notice it. You notice these moments.
All the other hormones can work properly too.
Exactly, because the DHEA is a precursor to the other hormones. Exactly. This amazing system works that way. And it's really interesting that generating core values, core emotions. Like if we look at all the religious traditions, if you like, all the spiritual traditions in the world, they all talk about love, kindness, compassion, gratitude, appreciation, dignity. So we know that's a human experience. Why is it wired into us? Well, what we've looked at with the research is when we sit down and consciously generate one of these feelings, which means authentically connecting with it. It doesn't have to be existential. It could be the fact that you're my friend. I'm really grateful for that. It could be, wow, I've just had this beautiful cup of tea made for me. That feeling starts a cascade of change neurologically, physiologically, hormonally, immune function. Everything's getting changed by our emotions. Now, we never knew that. We thought emotions were pretty ephemeral. The emotions, our emotions drive our physiology. We need to know that when we're dealing with anxiety. We need to understand that we're also not a victim to them. And we're not talking about suppressing anything here. We're saying, you know what? I really don't like this anxiety, but guess what? It's here. Now we start to talk to the habit of anxiety. So what most people do, I'm feeling anxious. And they off they go, being anxious. They don't intervene. They don't know they can intervene with people. Or any interventions aren't. You know, relaxation is a great intervention, but it doesn't last. It lasts while you're doing it. But you've got to go pick up the kids from school. You've got to get the dinner ready. You have to do the shopping. You've got to do your bills. You can't stay relaxed in this condition. In emergency, people think, oh, you have to be relaxed. You do not have to be relaxed. You're going to miss things. Oh, it's okay. I'm all chilled out. You need to be what we call coherent. And coherence is an optimal state for the human being. It's a term used in physics. A great example is an incandescent light, a normal light bulb in home, 60 watts, or a laser beam, Lasers, we can hold a laser and shine it on the moon and hit a cigarette pack size piece of metal 400,000 kilometers away. The photons are so coherent, they create this powerful beam, as opposed to the relaxed, scattered photons off your incandescent bulb. So when we turn that analogy onto the physical body, we can be reasonably incoherent. We're just getting around, things are happening. Or we can bring ourselves into coherence very quickly, very easily, and we are at our natural resonant state. The brain's firing the right thing, the immune system's doing its thing, we're feeling safe, we're relaxed. You know, a byproduct of coherence is increased parasympathetic action or increased relaxation.
Nervous system shift.
But it's not like you can still, you can go and work in an emergency situation or you can come across something that you have to deal with. So, and you don't have to take yourself away. Relaxation, we often have to take ourselves away from the coal face, close the door. It has to be quiet. What's all that? What is it? Can't relax. No, we can be coherent in any circumstances. And coherence is a foundational state, physiological state that we learn to cultivate as part of this training that we're talking about, so that we've got a really solid physiological platform that's informing our neurology. In fact, it's informing our consciousness. So we can then say, oh, say with anxiety, for example, oh, I'm not going to die. This isn't life-threatening in this moment. Okay, that's a start.
Reduce the urgency,
Get the urgency out. Because we don't. We normally stay in the habit of our anxiety, which is the back end, which is the urgency, is the threat. It's also the I'm not good enough. I'm a pathologized being. I'm not okay until I fix this. And I'd question that. I'd question that. You know, and we do question it. We come into the present moment again and we realize you're just fine. This is just what's happening.
And it is perpetuated by what we have surrounding us always. You know, I think about my moment from wake up to finish. You know, yes, I run a business, but you know, wake up on the phone, urgency of messages. You know, already in like a sort of like semi-state of consciousness and waking up, and then boom, you get hit with all these things. And then going all the way through the day, it's sort of like that, you know, like running after, and you run from thing to thing, literally. And I would safe to say that we have an epidemic of running women and people. And this is all the hormonal stuff that comes in that we're noticing in this sort of practice. But then you get to the end of the day and then you're on social media. And then, oh my goodness, that person's better looking than me. Oh, that person's more successful than me. Oh my goodness. You know, we're constantly making assumptions based on, again, you know, whatever social media says and the news. And then I don't even watch the news. I imagine the people who watch the news, my God.
It's interesting you bring that up because, you know, immediately my mind thinks about what we call comparison vanity. It's one of the core things behind anxiety. Approval vanity, another thing behind our anxiety. That unless we address, which no one even knows these terms, unless we address, we're not going to get to a more healthy relationship with our anxiety. But what you're talking about leads me to think about whether we're watching the news or not. You know, I always suggest to people, you know, I've put myself through 30-day news fasts where I have no news at all. And allow my body to reset, even though part of me is like, well, what am I missing out on? What am I missing out on? That's bullshit. You're not missing out on anything because you're living in the moment now. But what I have learned, and I have a very strong understanding and feeling of, is that we are one human being living on this rock with all its manifestations. You can think of mushrooms growing and the mycelium and all the nodes popping up, all the little mushrooms. We're all connected underneath. So anything happening in, dare I say, the United States of America, social upheaval, cultural change, Central Europe / Russia, Middle East, environmentally, globally, temperature, all that stuff is happening. And we're picking it up, whether we agree, whether we're plugged in and watching every news feed. There is this shimmy underneath. And you find it because when you sit to meditate and don't do anything, there is a sense of something. And it takes some time to find the stillness, our natural space, this place of stillness that we can access. And is actually like a balm. It's like an oasis in the desert. When you touch that stillness, everything's okay. Mm. It's a beautiful place to be.
Mm.
That's why I meditate. I won't say religiously, I'll say with a ultimate commitment every day,
mm-hmm.
to find that still spot, to rest in that for me. Because mm-hmm. I've learned I need that,
yep.
to survive at a reasonably healthy level,
yeah, in this society, coherent.
To be who I am.
Yeah.
So it leads to the thing of the tools and techniques and mm-hmm. things that we've now got. You know, some people say, oh, you're all stressed out. I thought you were the anxiety medic. What's wrong with you? It's like, dude, I'm living on the planet. That's what's wrong with me.
Human.
I'm human. Human in action with history,
yeah.
with nervous system, with all these things.
Yeah.
But I don't measure myself on whether I'm anxious. It's how long I'm staying there.
Mm.
That's the difference.
Absolutely.
How quickly can I bring myself to some ease?
Yeah.
Is it just a momentary looking inside and realizing I'm anxious?
Yeah.
Ooh, what's that coming from? Maybe I don't know. Maybe I do. I don't believe we need to go into the history so mm. much.
Mm.
I like to work in the immediacy. I like to work now. Because
mm.
as the saying says, the point of power is in the present moment.
Yeah.
And when we adjust our physiology through neurocardiology, through the understanding of how we can have agency over our system, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful cycle of not growth, but of agency, a cycle of agency that yeah. supports you. You makes you feel, it's mm-hmm. a virtuous cycle is probably yeah. a good way of saying
yeah.
it. One feeds to the other.
Yeah.
Now you're producing some DHEA, that feels good. Now you're feeling calmer. Yeah. That produces some serotonin, some dopamine.
Yeah.
The hormones are going well. Oh, now my brain's functioning a bit better. I can see I needed to have a bit of a break there. Yeah. I didn't have the break. That's why everything. And suddenly we're finding the yeah. space and the way to navigate life a little more fun.
Mm. And it's reaffirming, isn't it, for those continually to feel those things,
yeah.
then you're reaffirming, oh right, that's what I do to get back here. Oh yeah. right, that's what
right.
I...
exactly.
Yeah.
And we're depathologizing anxiety, and yeah. that's an important
yeah.
backstory to my anxiety medic mm. story
mm.
is that, you know, post-COVID I had terrible nervous system challenges. Very embarrassing for someone who spent so much time
mm.
understanding it.
Mm.
But I went to a doctor and said, you know, I can't sleep. I wake up 2 a.m. and, mm. oh, this is very common. Lots of people have been saying this. Yeah, okay, great. I'm part of the human race.
Ow. And, help me.
And then the offering was, we have some Valium, very addictive, so take care. Or we have some antidepressants. Take 2 to 3 months for them to kick in, and then you'll need to be on them for a while. And I was waiting for the option C. Option D or
the immediate E. Now, what can I help?
Yeah. But there was nothing. There wasn't an offering of counselling or something, which obviously
mm.
can be supportive but not going to do the job
yeah.
if the nervous system isn't
absolutely.
There. And I realised, my God, how many people were going through that? And interestingly, I had a 30-minute consult with someone inquiring yesterday,
mm.
this beautiful woman, and she's got a history of anxiety
mm.
tied into eating disorder. Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor, her psychologist, had suggested she try some medication just to get through this rough patch.
Mm.
2 days on it, and she said, I cannot do this.
Mm.
This has turned me into a zombie.
Mm.
I've got an 8-year-old daughter I can't connect with. I'm walking around like a yeah. I don't know what.
Yeah.
So she stopped.
Yeah.
It was, and again, this is why we talk about a medication-free approach.
Mm.
Now, I want to caveat that because sometimes medication can get you through
yeah.
and you need that.
Beverage, yeah.
And I'm not skilled enough to mm. be able to tell you whether that's the case.
Mm.
But if you feel in yourself that you don't want to be on medication,
yeah.
because we know it's only a Band-Aid,
mm.
there's no shown research mm. that medication has ever it. Healed anxiety, because anxiety doesn't need to be fucking healed, mm. basically.
Mm.
But yeah, exactly. we want to stay on a medication lifestyle.
Yeah.
No, a lot yeah. of people wake up to the fact, no, I want to be okay, being okay. And that's where this story is. That's yeah. the story we're sharing today.
Absolutely. And so when I think we'll step through, we could talk about this forever, but I'm like I've got like ding 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 all my little windows open at the moment.
No,
like, where should
too,
I go? No,
too
it's good.
Or too random.
No, but I want to sort of dive down into the 6 weeks, and I know this, and I'm as you know, I'm very big on personalized approach, and
yeah.
you know, it will be different according to what you're led by for each person.
Yes.
But what would you foresee a 6-week session or sessions looking like? And then for obviously the listeners, is this Zoom? Is this in person? Is this, so what does this look, what does the context around everything look like?
Thank you for inquiring about that, because this 6 weeks is sort of a distillation of decades of work.
Yeah,
it's really, what I learned is I can't share one modality because it immediately asks for another.
Mm.
So as I found with a lot of heart mouth people, a lot of people learning to change their neurology, their anxiety, their depression, their anger, whatever. They need some self-kindness. They need some mindful self-compassion. They need skills that endogenously, which means created on inside, creates their own oxytocin themselves. It soothes them. They don't need to go outside.
Yeah.
So I learned this over time.
Mm.
And also I learned at the beginning of my my training, the heart math training, I wanted to teach people every tool in the toolbox. And there's so many.
Yeah.
And that was crazy.
They can't,
that,
people can't take that much
exactly.
on, can they?
But yeah. It was my care going into overcare.
Absolutely.
So what I've learned, and I've really been applying it for the last sort of 5 years, is I meet people where they are. We have a foundational meeting. Now, in person is great because I'm here in Fremantle, in that area, for people in Perth, WA. And in that way, I can hook them up to my tech and show them their heart rhythms. I can get them to feel different emotions and see how much the heart rhythm changes in a minute of feeling different feelings. And then we can leverage that understanding to do the homework. I do it on the Zoom as well. I've got ways of sharing and showing that. But the initial meeting is really to explain this field, to explain how much our emotions affect our heart rhythms and how much that affects our thinking centers, our behavior, our presentation in the world. So we get underway, and it's a practical, you know, I can talk about the theory forever. I can talk about the research forever because I'm passionate. But this is a hands-on, do the work process. Because what happens is, if you don't do anything, nothing changes. But if you practice these tools and techniques, change happens. Obviously, different amounts for different people. But we start by establishing a practice that repatterns the amygdala, which is amazing that we can actually repattern this pattern recognizing machine. And what we do is we down regulate its response. So the example of that is, it's like a thermostat. And if it's set too high, what happens is you're always going off. You're always reacting. The smallest thing now fires you off. It's not the thing. It's all the other stuff behind the thing. But we don't see that in the moment. The kids have left their shoes in the hallway again. Kids! And we forget we've got two healthy, beautiful children. What's your priority here? If they were gone, you would give anything to have those shoes in the hallway.
Exactly.
Anything. That's the heart there. So we learn to get some prioritizing going around our response. We start a practice that has been shown over with hundreds of thousands of people that within 6 to 9 weeks, if you practice this consistently, and I've got an audio for you to guide you, make it really easy to do each day, your baseline will settle. It'll come down some notches, obviously different for every person. Most people report very quickly, wow, that just didn't upset me as much as it normally did. Oh, I've noticed in the traffic I was a lot calmer. Oh, when such and such said this, I didn't react so much. This is feedback that comes anyway. I say to people, don't worry about it for 6 weeks. Just do the practice.
Yeah,
it's like when you go to the gym. You start to go to the gym and you want to get all muscly and you start lifting some weights. You go home that night. Oh, nothing's happened.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck this.
Or you're really sore.
I'm so sore. What the hell is this?
Give it up.
But if you just did that weightlifting every day for 6 weeks, then you hopped in the mirror. There we are. Something's happened. It's like that.
Yeah.
But also what we really need, which points to what you expressed so well about getting up in the morning and the day, we need nervous system intervention. We need a reset throughout the day to stop the nervous system being in overdrive, settling for a moment, finding out where we are, what we're feeling in that moment. No, no big, you know, touchy-feely thing. This is just basics, like, how are you doing? Oh, I'm good. Or what's that? Oh, that's that conversation I had this morning that never got sorted. Oh, Now, the reality is, if you didn't notice that at 10 o'clock, by 5 o'clock, that's turned into something else.
Yeah.
That's turned into the
thing being layered.
Yeah, it's been laid. So we get the skill set of notice and ease. Mm. We notice where we are, we ease it. So we start introducing these tools straight away.
Mm.
We practice. Then we start to build on them. Now, everyone's going to come up against themselves.
Yeah.
Often midway in, we get some pushback. The nervous system's like, what are you messing with here?
Yeah.
This is an evolutionary survival response that you're messing with in the amygdala and all these things.
Yeah.
And I always say, let's celebrate that. Obviously, something's happening.
We're telling you to fuck off. And you're like, yeah.
Yes, so we dumb down. let's do an extra one. Let's look where that's pushing back. And maybe something's been revealed. Maybe something's bubbling up. And we can look at that. So it's not talk therapy. I'm not really interested in the past. I mean, I can sit and listen to your story forever because we love stories. Humans are about stories.
Yeah.
And I'm filled with stories.
Mm.
But we want to get on and get the results. That's why you come along. Yeah. We want to ease that suffering. We want to downregulate that anxiety, the depression, the loneliness, the whatever's going on. We want to get an understanding and a new relationship with it.
Mm.
So on the way, I'm using my irreverent humor, my irreverent nature to help give people a perspective shift. Because when you have a perspective shift, everything changes. Mm. And I shared an example just then. It was a real example. I had a fellow come along. He was the husband of a woman that had worked with me for 6 weeks.
Mm.
And she was aching for him to come along because he was a bit wired. He'd come home from work and he's shouting at the kids.
Mm-hmm.
He's stomping around, being the big alpha male in the house,
mm-hmm.
which we know in this modern world, it's not very politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
So he came along. And in his very first session,
mm.
I used that perspective shift of you carrying on about the kids leaving a mess and everything, but if something tragic happened and they were removed from your life, you would give anything for that mess in your lounge room.
Mm.
Is that true?
Mm.
And he had this odd look in his face and shook his head.
Yeah.
And he came back next week, on the second week, and his life had changed.
Mm.
He took that one shift in perspective, he applied it to his upset, his anxiety, his stress, and it ameliorated a percentage enough he could approach the problem very differently. So there's lots of perspective shifts we can feed into the story, the journey, that really authentically start to change the way we see what's happening to us from within or without, to start to become more emotionally regulated and to start to feel, you know, more joy, more happiness, more peace, all these things that we're actually wanting, they're right there anyway.
Mm.
And as long as we don't pathologize ourselves,
yeah.
I think it's a lot easier to get there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what if we're going to feel anxious for the rest of our life?
Yeah.
Does that mean we have to have a shit life? Yeah. I say no.
Mm.
I've learned that what I'm carrying will probably be with me forever because it was laid down early.
Mm.
Foundational stones of maladaptive behavior.
Mm.
And, you know, I've worked through my addictions, I've worked through my sufferings, and now I've got a new relationship when they pop up. And I know how to talk to them, I know how to be with them, and then they just drop away again. And so I love the fact I have a rich history. There's not much that sits in front of me, but I can't at least find a shaping to say, wow, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around the bush. There's no joy in that story, but it doesn't have to define you.
Mm.
And we need to stop being defined by our story. We want to start being in the present, living life as we are.
Yeah, and that's why you're born to do this, Philo.
It's very good. Yeah.
No, it's absolutely incredible. I must say, like, I have stepped through in a similar way, of course, with you before Marley was born, and that would have been 9 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so even from that, doing that 9 years ago, the perspective changes that you've given, and obviously what we've been through in terms of the HRV, and I've done some follow-up sessions with you along the way as well. But those moments of perception shift, and so the time back to what should I say, like cognitive dissonance, the time away from that is so much shorter now. You know, I have the power now to go, oh fuck, that was a bit much.
Yeah.
And then I can shift so much faster. it won't alleviate the fact that we do react still, you know. But I think that's really important to understand, is that you feel like you have more power,
yeah,
more control over those reactions, and they don't get to a point where you're like, I really fucked up so badly there, you know.
Now I'm in a big hole.
Now we're in a really big hole. So it's sort of like you have a little bit more time to play with these scenarios, and that is gold.
Absolutely, Joel. Gold. And that's the essence of this work, is that we don't want to turn that switch off.
Mm.
But the switch is on all the time at the moment.
Exactly.
That's the challenge, is that we found that this switch, that's why there's that constant anxiety under the surface.
Mm.
And as you talked about with social media, with the news, with the culture, the society we're living in, that switch is now jammed on.
Mm.
And we now know, though, we can turn it off, or not off, but we can turn it back to what it should be, which is, yes, fire off when I'm under threat, please. But don't stay on forever, because often the perception of the threat is not real. And this is what people don't understand, is our nervous system is responding to all these mini threats as if they were life-threatening.
Mm.
And they're not. They're not. It doesn't matter if John doesn't like you. It doesn't matter if you're not as successful as you thought you wanted to be.
But it feels that way, doesn't it?
That's what matters, that it feels like that. Yeah. That's what we need to change in that relationship. And it came to me this morning when I was coming here as well. I was thinking about, you know, for me, I've got a bit of a beam of bonnet about the fact we live in the most, you know, so-called advanced society that the world's ever seen. Some people say the Lemurians were further ahead, but I don't know that, so I can't say that. We live in a culture where everything's available.
Mm,
you know, I've got hydrogen water in front of me. I've got herbal teas from around the planet, all this stuff.
Water,
But the most basic tenet of shelter is not guaranteed.
Mm.
And I'll explain why that's so important. Mm. So foundationally, humans only need a few things, food, shelter, and friendship.
Mm.
If we've got those, we're covered evolutionarily.
Mm.
But the challenge is, you live in your house, but you only live there if you can pay your mortgage and your rent. So if something happens with your work and suddenly your income drops off, and that's underneath all the time. We're not aware that underneath is our very survival mechanism firing off that what if, what if, what if. And say you get sick for a while and you don't have private health cover. Or maybe you get sick and you lose that functionality of that skill that you spent 30 years monoculturing yourself into that only role. All this maybe, that's actually going on under the surface.
Anxiety.
And that's what anxiety is. Mm-hmm. And anxiety is, it's been overly simplified and it's been overly pathologized. And my idea is that we change this understanding to say, my God, of course we're anxious.
Yeah.
We're living in such an anxious time. Change is anxious.
Mm.
It doesn't mean we can't deal with it. It doesn't mean that it's not something to embrace.
Mm.
It's just what's going on.
What it is,
And once we get to that spot,
mm.
it's like when you're hungry, that's what's going on. It doesn't mean there's no food for me, or I'm never going to eat again, or if I don't eat, or this, or it's not all these stories. It's like, in this moment, I have sensations that I'm interpreting as hunger. Am I hungry? Well, I've made a story about it. So often, you know, everything we experience as humans are really just sensations with stories around
them. Yeah.
Even the sensation of being a human being, we can explore that and realize that maybe what's there isn't really what's there.
And anxiety is almost like, I was just thinking then when you're saying, is like this, it's driver to action.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a driver to
That's
action.
That's
right. But it's done, it's overdone.
It's so overdone.
It's out of control. It's like you said, like, right. You know, like even the immune system at the moment, we're dealing with the chaotic immune system because there is just so much going on, and then the interaction with the nervous system, obviously, and this anxiety. So it's this out of control action point that doesn't need to be actioned anymore, but it's run.
Yeah. And that's what leaves you so drained.
Yeah.
People wonder why. You know, there's such great research around how people are feeling with their energy, with their day-to-day energy, and why they're so exhausted before lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Normally it was when you got home at 5 o'clock, but that's backed up now. Mid-afternoon, we hear about doing your Wim Hof breathing mid-afternoon to help reset, or having a nap. Then we get to before lunch, or you get up in the morning, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And we see that exhaustion is directly related to everything I've been talking about today. Yeah. Because when we overcare, when we're anxious, our nervous system is actually activating hormones for fight, flight, freeze.
Mm.
These are hormones, adrenaline, norepinephrine. These are things to mobilize us.
Mm.
But they're meant for a short time. Mm. So if they're on all the time, obviously we're going to be drained. Adrenal fatigue, it's mm. that sort of thing.
Oh.
All those
yeah.
fatigues mm. are coming because we're too on
yep.
and not enough time off.
Yep.
Catherine and I were talking about lingering. Mm. Who lingers anymore?
Mm.
Who just gets together and lingers? Sure. There's no lingering going no. on. It's this thing, go, 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 go. The next Sorry. Thing, yep. the next yep. thing, appointment. The next thing.
Yep. Mm.
It's like, what mm. happened to the lingering? Mm. We had a moment of lingering the other morning down at the beach.
Mm.
It just happened with these chaps we bumped into. And it just turned into, I don't know, it could have been 10 minutes, could have been 20. I was lingering. I wasn't looking at my clock.
Yeah.
I was open to the moment yeah. that emerged.
Yeah.
And afterwards he said, lingering. We had some lingering and how it nourished us.
Yeah.
It just helped. Nothing big happened.
Mm.
It wasn't like okay. I went viral on Facebook. Yeah. All that happened was I was standing listening to some humans so having a chat.
Yeah.
We're outside. That was yeah. nice. We'd had our swim. That was nice. But mm. we were just together.
Mm.
And the fact that all four of us lingered mm-hmm. was a beautiful experience mm. instead of the busy back soon. Oh, I haven't got time. I've got to go on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And so lingering, I strongly support lingering.
Yeah, let's do more lingering. It feels almost odd, you know, and we'll also have this conversation a lot. Even with I was chatting with Pani yesterday and she's like, we're on holidays now. I feel really weird when I get to a certain point.
Yeah.
And it's this lingering. That we're like, this is weird. We're not used to this. Like, I don't normally linger. Like,
quick, get what, what's
next?
Pocket.
Yeah.
Next, there we go.
Yeah, now we're back at anxiety again.
Exactly. Ameliorating through action.
Yeah.
Now that's true.
Set point restored. We're good now.
Exactly.
So we can never drop below that set point.
Beautiful. You've expressed that perfectly, Jodie. That is a perfect example of the amygdala's set point
yeah.
of normalcy.
Yeah.
The maladaptive behavior, we call it.
Yeah.
We're adapting to something because that's an evolutionary practice,
mm.
but it's maladapted.
Mm.
It's not normal to sit here when we've got a moment of peace to suddenly feel we have to do something and then we're okay because we're doing. We are human beings for a reason,
mm-hmm.
and we're not very skilled at being. And yet, when we get to being, when we get to the present moment,
mm.
and we drop all our stories, all our objectifications, all our interpretations, it's a great spot to be, and it's Nothing available that's... right now. You can feel it.
Yeah, like, I can feel it, yeah.
How nice is that?
Yeah.
And from that stillness, from that space, arises the nod for the next thing. Oh, I've got to get the kids from school.
Mm.
Oh, I might just head out the back and see how the better garden's going. You know, who knows? It doesn't matter what comes up.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you didn't choose the next thing based on cerebral drive.
Love that. Yeah.
You did the next thing on what emerged in the
moment. What actually was needed.
And that takes practice
mm.
because we've lost the capacity to listen to our heart's intelligence.
Yeah.
And heart's intelligence isn't a woofy woo-woo thing. Heart intelligence has been researched.
Mm.
The heart responds before events happen.
Yeah.
It's picking up data from the environment mm. and feeding it to you. But you need to quieten the mind,
mm.
settle the emotions
mm.
so you can listen.
Yeah.
And often it's saying, go left, and you're heading to the right. And finally one day you decide to do some breaths and stop and linger, and you hear go left, and you head there, and all these lovely people waiting for you saying, where you been? Oh, I was over there. So I'm already waiting for you. That's life there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think people will realize that this happens in the shower a lot.
Yes. Because you let go.
Exactly. Yeah, or at night time in bed. You know, I know I'll never forget anything. Like I know myself that now I don't have an urgency. I write this, but I know that eventually if I'm meant to remember something, it will come. So I trust in that. So late in bed at night, I'm like, right, what have I forgotten to do? Boom, 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 boom. You forgot to pay this bill. I'm like, right, cool, down, yeah, thanks. Exactly. Yeah. So it's like getting yourself into that right state.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's caring for ourselves. It's about cultivating our humanity. It's mm. about reconnecting to what's our nature. And this culture, I want to just say this
mm.
particular statement that epitomizes what's going on for all of us in the well-being industry, in the personal growth industry, in the spiritual growth industry, that everything's been industried, is that
mm.
Krishnamurti, philosopher of the 20th century, had the most profound statement that I sort of, it just comes up pretty well every day, or at least every week. And I share it with people because when you really listen to what it's saying, it's so relevant to what's going on. But there's a question at the end, and the statement is, being well adjusted to a profoundly sick society is no measure of health. So we're trying to be adjusted to this profoundly unwell society to be healthy.
Oh.
And we're trying so hard, it's killing us.
Literally running uphill.
So the question has to be, do you want to keep doing that?
Mm.
Or do you want to find a different path,
mm.
a different way where you can still be in the culture? We're not saying run off and live in a commune. Done that. It can be fun. Mm. Not very sustainable, but can we live in this and bring through the core values and serve life from our hearts rather than our thoughts, rather than a culture that is driven by capitalism and greed and getting, having, and never having enough?
Yeah.
Never such a funny thing. It's driven by all the getting, but then underneath is always, it will never be enough anyway.
Mm.
And we know that.
Mm.
So what's the question is, how do you want to live this precious life?
Mm.
Do you want to unconsciously be dragged along,
mm.
or do you want to put your foot down, say, no, I'm going to linger for a bit, and I'm going to reset my nervous system and have a different outlook on my life, what's going on, and how I interact.
Mm.
Do I stop and sit with my friends and chat, or am I too busy for them?
Yeah. And huge questions that we need to be asking. And looking after self is paramount when it comes to anxiety.
You got it.
So, right, Willow, we have a workshop coming up with you in August, don't we? So if anyone is in Perth, they can come and see you in person and give you a big hug.
Always open to
hugs. It's the best hugs ever.
Very good.
And so tell everyone where they can find you.
Okay. I'm not a big marketing person.
Yeah.
That's my Achilles heel in this 21st century communication world.
Yeah.
But I have a website called theanxietymedic.com. And on there, there's plenty of spots where you press the button. It takes you to a calendar, so you can book in a free 30-minute chat with me. And there's no obligation. That's just to see who you are, what's going on, if we're a fit.
Yep.
There's a phone number. I talk, like, on the phone.
Actually on the phone? Actually, really?
My telephone.
Wow. And
a device.
You're a real person, Willow.
But I also take the small message services if you want to use that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. And I'm here to serve. I'm here to meet you where you are and hopefully alleviate some of that stress and anxiety, that the not being in the present, the joy, because the other part of me lives in a state of awe and wonder all the time. I'm just blown away at being alive because I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that. I found I'm okay with, like, how does this work? 50 trillion reactions happening in my body every second, all coordinated with each other. My fingers don't fly off the end of my hand. That's amazing. Because if we get an electron microscope and we look at my hand, there's space.
Yeah.
There's just so much space there.
Yeah.
We're doing everything from a human perspective,
quantum,
which is very limited.
Mm.
Our capacity to perceive color, light, temperature, gravity. We apply that to the whole universe, but fundamentally, we know fuck all.
Yeah,
and we have to be humble enough.
Yeah.
To approach life with that, because with that humility, it leaves us open for the lessons, for learning, for understanding, exactly, for growth and change and being together,
And to see the beauty.
And to see the beauty, and the wonder.
Yeah.
Just in one moment, your life can turn around. When you glance out the window, the sunlight's hitting a leaf in a certain way, it hits your retina, flips it upside down, puts it into the brain, turns it into electrical energy, and then makes another picture.
Yeah.
And you take that for granted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't take it for granted. It's like, oh my goodness, isn't this amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't this amazing? Then life.
The saddest part, one final thing from me, I just don't want to leave this conversation, but the saddest part I find about seeing clients and seeing people in a constant anxiety state is that they are missing out on that beauty.
Jody, it's, yeah.
And it's that's suffering for me.
Yes.
To watch.
Yes.
Because, you know, yes, we experience it, and I've experienced it through psychedelics. I experience it on my own. I'm in constant awe as well. You know, I'm the weirdo that stares at a tree and like talks to it. So, you know, like, you're so cool.
Yeah.
And the crows in the morning, you know, like, well, what are you up to today, buddy? Yeah,
exactly.
But those who are stuck in that hole of anxiety and depression or whatever we want to call it, they are missing out on that. It's so sad.
It's funny you're finishing on this note, Jodie, because my whole life journey seems to have been meeting people in odd places around the world, some little kitchen in back end of Scotland or some pub with a dishwasher in England or in a theater, operating theater in somewhere. And I always meet one person, and it's bringing them to this point of awe, showing them that, no, what they're perceiving is just dictated by a lot of factors. It's not what's going on.
Yeah,
and just opening enough of the moment for them to see.
Awaken.
And it's opened them up.
Mm-hmm.
And they've moved, they've quit, they've got rid of, they've done these actions that have then allowed the journey to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And the journey is to this awe, this magnificence, the love, the bigness of things. And I think, if nothing else, what you said really wraps everything up. We're missing out on what's right in front of us, and we don't have to. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Willow. Until next time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate all your care and all the work you're doing. You're helping people alleviate their physical, mental, emotional suffering as well. So thanks so much.
It's all of us together.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and it is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.